You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Are you ready for a good game?
Final hour here on a Thursday of the Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com, 710 Sports app, etc. If you missed the anger of Brock Huard on the podcast yesterday, the Brock and Salk podcast, you can hear some of it coming up at 9:30. Husky fans, beware. Brock is as mad and as embarrassed as I've ever heard him, so some good stuff coming up with him at 9:30. Jake Heaps is here.
What's up, Salk?
Dude, I'm getting all the Seahawks quarterbacks. Brock, Matt Hasselbeck, I got you here.
What a privilege for you.
Thank you. Yeah, it is
just
a privilege.
Surrounded by quarterbacks.
Yes, on all Seahawks quarterbacks. Yes, that's my goal. I think, let's see, who else do we need to have in here over these next few weeks? We'll try to find some other gems. Maybe Matt Flynn will come on. You never know.
Or Clipboard Jesus. That would be perfect.
Charlie Whitehurst would be fantastic.
Bring him on in.
Maybe we'll do that. Hey, I brought you in today and excited to have you on. Just wanted to talk about Russ and Waldron and what we saw in week one. But some really sad breaking news coming out today. And I'm sorry to talk to you about this. In no way did we think this would be the case. But I know you knew him. Trevor Moad was Russell's performance coach, mental skills coach.
Yep.
He's become fairly well known in the area, and I know he's worked with a lot of people. He worked with Brock's daughter. I mean, he's worked with a lot of young athletes and other local athletes on their mental skills training, and obviously that's a huge part of what Russ does. And we found out this morning that he passed away due to complications from cancer.
Yep.
It was not public that he was sick. I know you knew him and knew him pretty well, so first of all, my condolences. I'm really sorry.
Well, I appreciate that, and yeah, I came in and ready to, you know, come in, prepare for the show, and found out just like a few minutes before. And the crazy part about it is he's battling cancer for 2 years, and he kept it very, very privately to the point where I didn't even know. Mm. And, you know, him and I have talked at length, consider him a very close and good friend. I was talking with him 3 weeks ago, just kind of joking around about him coming on the station and, you know, talking to us and everything. And usually do that once a year, you know, just to get him on the airwaves and have him, you know, have people exposed to, you know, what he brings to the table and the idea of neutral thinking. And so this is very much still a shock for me right now, but it also doesn't surprise me that he would keep this from everyone because of that's just who he is. He didn't want the attention on him. He wanted it on the athletes that he worked with. And he would do literally anything for those people that he worked with to try and see the very best out of them. And I saw it firsthand in my life, but I saw it also firsthand with Russell Wilson. And, I mean,
how much of an effect do you think he's had on Russell's career?
I mean, for Russell being who he is, I mean, I would say a tremendous influence on who Russell Wilson is. I mean, when you talk about...
When did they start working together?
They started working together. Trevor initially was the director of performance at IMG Academy. Mm-hmm. So Trevor, you just talk about his scope. He's worked with so many high-performance athletes, particularly on the football side, for years.
And IMG, for those who don't know, is a gigantic... It's the biggest agency. They represent a ton of people, both in sports and Hollywood. It is a incredibly powerful agency, one of the biggest power brokers in the entertainment and sports world.
Right, and they have a facility that... Look, if you're lucky enough to have an agent want to send you to IMG, which is like the crown jewel of performance training facilities for the draft and other sports as well, then you're probably really good. Mm-hmm. You're getting drafted. You're first, second, third round type of guy. And Russell Wilson went there and met Trevor, and they instantly connected. And Trevor brought up, you know, mental performance, and Russell was instantly interested and engaged and was dialed into that. And they grew an unbelievable friendship and relationship out of that and from that. I think is one of the main key factors into Russell Wilson's success, not just his physical gifts, but why he is so incredibly special as a quarterback is his mentality. Mm-hmm. And Trevor Moad had a huge influence on that.
Well, I can't imagine the state Russ is in today, and obviously he must have known about this, but to find this out a couple days before a game and to just in general, his friend, his confidant, a person that he's relied on so much, I'm sure it is with a heavy heart that he will play this weekend.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And, you know, knowing Russ, I mean, this performance and everything will be dedicated to Trevor. Mm-hmm. He meant so much to him, and so this is definitely tough. You know, for me, this is tough for Russ. I know that. And, you know, this is, I think, for the sporting community, as you mentioned, just had the opportunity to affect in a positive way so many athletes in this space and really was able to highlight and perform in a level or take this, you know, sports performance aspect to a different level, much like Michael Gervais. You know, Trevor Moad, Michael Gervais, these guys just totally elevated what it meant and eliminated the stigma of athletes needing mental performance or needing to work on it and actually looking at it as a positive and saying, no, this is something that I should be working on and rather just putting it off to the side.
I like that part of it. I think I didn't plan to make this about mental skills or Trevor Moad, but mm-hmm. I love what you have to say there about eliminating some of the stigma of working on the mental side. And we've talked about that on this station over the years that, you know, and it comes up when we see some of these really sad moments, suicide, Helsinki.
Yep.
Was an example of that, right? Where Tyler Helsinki, I'm just blanking on his name. Sorry about that. But with Tyler Helsinki, you know, this idea that people do need help. And when you have an issue with your arm, you go see a doctor. And if you have an issue with your lungs, you go see a doctor. And if you have an issue with your mind or your emotions, you go see a therapist of some sort. It's what my wife does for a living. She's a therapist in private practice. And, you know, in talking to her, there are a lot of people who won't be surprised that that's what it takes to hang out with me every day. But, you know, that you get help. When you need help, you get help. And it's not unmanly and it's not unmasculine and it doesn't mean you failed as a person.
Right.
It's the same as if you have an issue with your rotator cuff. You might need to talk to somebody who can take a look at it.
Yeah. And also not just address the situation and help you be better when you're struggling and in those moments, but also to move it forward, to propel it forward. How is your mind where it's at right now and how can we make it even better? And I think that that's also the way that Trevor brought it up that made it very comfortable for athletes and for young people to look at it and say, okay, yeah, I can buy into that. I can get better in that way. And that was kind of almost the Trojan horse that kind of used to sneak in to actually get to the root and the heart of real issues and problems. I mean, he worked with, you know, Nick Saban in Alabama. He's working with Georgia. I mean, he just, you know, there's so many athletes that he affected in a positive way that my heart is just really heavy right now when it comes to Trevor and, you know, and anybody that was in his sphere. I'm really praying for them and because I know how much he meant to me personally.
Well, again, my condolences. Jake Heaps with me here in the Mike Salk Show. I'm sorry we now only have a few more minutes, but I do want to talk to you about Russ and what we saw this weekend with Shane Waldron. Brock mentioned the gimmies that Russ got out of this new offense. He said there were maybe 10 throws that 100% of the quarterbacks in the NFL get to complete, and that's due to Shane. Russ still does the crazy Russ stuff.
Yep.
But in watching it, it's really – there weren't many plays that Russ made in that game that only Russ could throw. Maybe two?
Yeah.
I mean, the deep ball to Lockett, that's something he's great at. Maybe the other touchdown to Lockett. Were there any other throws in that game that were specifically Russell?
No, it was another day at the office.
It's crazy.
Right? Like, that was my biggest takeaway is the same exact thing is coming in here and talking about that. How hard did that look? How, if you rank it in the Russell Wilson performance of how great he can be, he just made it look easy, right? But that's what a great system and a great scheme can do for you. It can elevate the talent that is around you and it makes it easy. And what I've been trying to yell from the rooftops for the last 9 years of this system is that what it's required your best players to do and it's what it's required Russell Wilson to do, it has made him have to be the playmaker, the guy that's making things happen 60% of the time in your offensive play calls. And that is so incredibly hard to do.
Hard to sustain.
At the quarterback level and sustain. That's why you see the bottom fallout in certain games. Mm. That's why you saw the bottom fallout for a a unique period of time last year in the second half of the season, is that that style is not sustainable against really good quality opponents over the length of 16 games, over the length of a playoffs. And so now, you know, the whole Russ Cook movement and all that, I think a lot of it was, you know, watered down into what it actually meant. And really going into this last game, if I could give you the perfect picture of what Russ Cook looks like, that was it.
Well, and it's interesting. They still ran it more than they threw it.
Yes.
This was not like any, you know, hey, Pete did it all wrong. It was that when they threw it, there was creativity, there was ease, it made more sense.
Exactly.
You know, the other part of it that I found curious, and I was saying this yesterday, that I it feels to me like Russ is entering a third phase in his career. And if the first phase was about his legs and the second phase was about his arm, it seems like this third phase is going to be about his head. And I just couldn't help but notice, A, he didn't really run read option, and B, they had a lot of time at the line of scrimmage for him to do his thing.
Yes, and that is the transition that's been happening over the last couple of years, to be honest with you. I mean, look at last year. He ran for over 500 yards. I think it was like 500, you know, close to 550 yards. But he didn't run hardly any read option stuff.
So why keep running the play?
Well, that's a great question.
Right? Like,
and that
it's
is
not
also,
good for your running
back. That is also
back.
The reason why sometimes I felt like I was banging my head up against the wall.
Stop running
about
it.
The offensive scheme and system. So
hand
now,
the ball to these guys going downhill.
Right. So now you're in a different transition of this offense, and I think that now you're in a position where Russell Wilson's finally saying, yes, this is what I've wanted. This is where I want to be. This is how I want us to operate, and feel really good about that, because you are right that there is this transition. I just know that that transition happened about 2-3 years ago, and it's been why you've seen some of the friction and some of the tension that's happened is trying to get to this point right here and right now, and eventually coming together to that is been great to see.
Audibling with 16 seconds left on the play clock? Is that allowed?
I mean,
I thought
I
could only do it when you had 2 seconds
be.
Left.
I didn't know it could
timeout.
Be here with Pete, but it is now, and that's the thing that I really love about this is the total buy-in that's there from Pete right now. We'll see when there's real adversity, because it's going to happen.
Or when teams see this offense and scheme for it and everything else.
Absolutely. Sure. But the thing is that this is a system. What they did last year, the best way I can describe it, is basically you're stranded on an island. You're using all the tools and resources that you have to try and duct tape a life raft together. And you're out there in the ocean. And when the first real wave comes, it completely falls apart. Now they actually have a legitimate ship that they are on that can withstand some of the waves that get thrown its way.
Good stuff, man. Thanks for coming in. Jake and Stacy every day from 10 until 2 o'clock.
That's right.
What do we got today?
That's fun. Well, right now we're a little heartbroken about the Mariners. No. So we're going to be definitely talking about that. You look at this group, and it just, it's right there in front of you. You know it's there. You can almost taste it.
You were 18 inches away from winning that game yesterday. It was so close. All right, Jake and Stacy.
So bad.
Coming
me.
Up right after this show in 45 minutes at 10 o'clock. Thank you, man. Good to have you.
All right. It's
all right,
great
there
to
you
have
you. There's Jake Heaps. And again, my condolences. The Trevor Moad thing, just incredibly sad. And just he was about, 48 years old? I think he's about 5 years older than me. Just a really sad moment for a guy that touched a lot of people around here. And you know a lot of people that are connected to him, even if you don't know him personally. So really, really sad news. Right now, it is 9:15. Time for Need to Know.
Need to Know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Yeah, Jake said he was sad about the Mariners, and I don't blame him. They lose yesterday afternoon, and honestly, I do have too much respect for this team to declare the season over. I will not say it. Seriously. I will not say it until they are actually mathematically eliminated, and it's not because I don't think that it might be true. It's because they deserve it. They deserve our respect for what they've accomplished this year, for how resilient, for how tough they've been, and for how many times I've thought their season might be about ready to crash into a, I don't know, iceberg, and yet they've managed to steer around it, bail water, and find a way to keep moving on. So yesterday it was the offense that just couldn't capitalize. They had their chances and just weren't able to score, including a big one in the ninth inning as Jared Kelnick was not able to come through with a man on first and then second base. Nearly hit a game-winning double down the line, but unfortunately went just foul, and that was about it. They gave it up in the 10th as Swanson and Sheffield just didn't have it, and they were the last resorts in the bullpen anyway. Couldn't answer the bell, so the Mariners fall to 4 games back, and there really are just too many good teams and not enough games left for them to claw their way back into this, but hey, this is longer into the season than I think most of us thought they would go. And I thought this might happen a few weeks ago. Instead, they've kept fighting, and here they are. That's why they deserve our respect. They fought. They've succeeded far beyond their talent level. They have been a true team, a testament to what culture can bring, and unfortunately, perhaps undone here by their respective weaknesses, their hitting, their depth, etc., and just couldn't score enough runs to hang with the big boys. The lower end of their pen just wasn't up to it in the big moments, and so maybe too much was asked of them.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Yeah, it's pretty close to win or die for the Huskies this weekend as they host Arkansas State here. All right, that's a bit of an exaggeration, but not by much. I don't know that you could say just how big a game this is for them against a non-Power 5 conference school, but if they lose this, they've got a real problem that would get exponentially worse. My fear is that you will have wasted the Chris Peterson era, that you will be back to where you were before Peterson, heck, before Sark, sort of that 2008 Ty Willingham era of losing 0 and going 0-12. That doesn't mean they go 0-12. It's just that you wasted the opportunity that Chris Peterson brought to bring real credibility and excitement to this school, and that matters in college football. Perception matters and affects reality in college football. How do you recruit? Well, you've got to appear to the 16, 17-year-old kids to be a place that they want to go. And if you don't appear that way, then they won't want to go to your school. And if the best kids don't want to go to your school, then you are playing with talent that is subpar. Chris Peterson bringing these kids to the Peach Bowl and into the playoff a few years ago was supposed to get this team back to the level it had been at years ago. And unfortunately, as you look at it today, it feels like things have regressed. So I don't know where it goes next. I'm not saying Jimmy Lake's job is in jeopardy, nor should it be, but they got problems with both of their coordinators. And at some point, they're going to have to start to move forward, and there's going to have to be some level of results in fixing this, because I don't see how a fan base should have to accept that. And oh, by the way, if wealthy fans who donate to the cause are the ones that are truly upset and want change, change happens, because they're the ones who write the checks. And unlike the pros, fans, wealthy fans, but fans can have some very real power in the way the future of the team is dictated.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Yeah, mostly good news on the Seahawks injury report. Looks pretty clean heading into this week two against Tennessee. Rashad Penny missing with the calf. Dwayne Eskridge still has his concussion. And Ethan Posick looks like he'll go to short-term IR. But, all right, that's pretty healthy. Tennessee fairly healthy as well. But for whatever reason, they've gotten bad. And we're talking to John Clayton about it. Nobody seems to understand how this defense has gone in the wrong direction. But you watch them over the last few years, it looked like they were on their way to, you know, ascending, to being really good, maybe even great. All right, maybe not quite great because Ryan Tannehill's just okay. But their physicality, their defense, it really did seem poised to carry them and maybe even beyond what they had at quarterback. And instead, the defense has gone the other way. Add a rushing team with no D. I don't see how that works. If you want to be a rushing team, you've got to have some defense, and it just doesn't make sense philosophically. Still, they do have Julio Jones. They do have A.J. Brown, so tough day for the cornerbacks, and you're going to have to win because the odds are everyone else in your division is going to win. It looks like the best division in the league. Niners are at Philly. Arizona hosts Minnesota. Rams are at Indy. So none of them are playing the best teams in the league this week. So, you know, Would it be shocking if all of a sudden you looked up and the rest of the division was 2-0? No, I don't think so. In the meantime, Thursday Night Football tonight, and it is a good one, at least if it was 1994. Giants and Washington, Daniel Jones and Tyler Heinicke. Let me say that again. Daniel Jones and Tyler Heinicke on national TV. Taylor, Tyler, does it matter? Is it Taylor? It's Heinicke. That guy didn't deserve a first name.
It's Taylor.
Sure.
Yeah, it's Taylor.
All right. Whatever. Taylor Heinicke. Yeah. They're on national TV. Great. That's three things you need to know.
Going back to your first
point.
Wait a
minute. Hold on. Before you ask a question, I get corrected on Taylor and Tyler. How many years did you produce for John Clayton? Did you correct all of John's names?
Well, I did. There was a Tyler Lockett issue there for a while. I can't remember what he was calling. TJ. He was calling him TJ. He was mixing TJ Duckett.
And Tyler Lockett. Yeah, I could see that.
So I did correct
that. That's something I would do. I could see that. I forgive John a lot of his name things because I am right there with him. Like, I count me in as somebody who will screw up names all the time. So, yeah, John gets forgiven in my book.
Going back to your first point, I need to know, and you mentioned, you know, not giving up on the team. Yeah. They deserve it. I did see a tweet last night that I cracked up at, that no fan base should ever know as much about mathematical elimination as Mariners fans do.
No, that's true. And, yeah, this is going to add one more season. This will be, what, number 20 in a row. And so hopefully next year is the year to end this god-awful streak of missing out on playoffs. But, look, I am happy with what they did. I do respect them. I do think they're farther along this year than I thought they would be. Next year is really where you start to put the pressure on. The question is, what are you going to do now to go from where you are to where you need to be? Because even if that ball falls in last night, even if you win that game and you're still in this thing, the odds are still against you. I mean, like, you're still in it with a chance, but the odds are against you. And you and I can still be mature enough to look at who their roster is versus who the real contenders are. And I don't just mean the contenders for the wild card. It's easy to get sucked into, well, you're competing against Toronto, Boston, Oakland. No, you're not. You're competing against them, yes, but you're also competing against the White Sox and the Astros and the Rays. And don't forget the Dodgers and the Giants and the best teams in baseball. The goal's not to make the playoffs. The goal's to win the World Series.
Plan parades.
That's why you play the games.
Yes.
So Jerry DePoto, who we talked to today, yes, it's good that these guys are getting the experience. Yes, it's good that you're close. But close isn't good enough. Eventually, you've got to be good enough to win the World Series. So what is the plan to get there? Not to get just better, but to get great. That's what you've got to do. Patience is part of it. Patience is the shortcut. That's what it says in their office. And I buy into it. I'm excited about Kirby. I'm excited about Hancock. I'm excited about Julio. But not all these guys you can't afford to bring them all up to the big leagues. Some of them need to be packaged in trades for guaranteed veteran great players. It's what they did in Houston. It's what they did in Chicago. It is how you ultimately get over the top and get great. So that's what's got to come next. And we'll spend a lot of time talking about it, especially now that we are kind of past the contention phase of 2021. All right. We are ranking things as we do in 20 minutes, which will allow me to tell, I hope, one of my favorite stories, weirdest things that's ever happened to me. That's coming up at 9:45, right after Brock Huard, who is angry and embarrassed. And it's next on the Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
Every morning at 7:45 and 9:30.
Brought to you by Precor Home Fitness.
On the Mike Salk Show.
What Brock Huard says? No, he's not a friend.
Subscribe to receive new episodes of the Brock and Salk podcast at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Yeah! Yeah! Good morning, buddy. How we doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Hey, I'm getting some tweets this morning.
Yeah.
Did something happen on our podcast yesterday?
Yeah.
Because I think you were asleep.
I was.
You were exhausted.
A little tired.
I think I blacked out.
You must have.
On the last. What happened?
Yeah. We were just playing some of the sound from yesterday on the podcast. You can find it at brockandsalkpodcast.com, the whole thing. Brock, I've never heard you rant like that about UW. Seriously. I mean, you sound legitimately angry and embarrassed.
Well, I think I do in this case represent a lot of the Husky fans that are equally frustrated and embarrassed and just at a loss for what's happening on the field, especially at the line of scrimmage. Right, this is a team. I think that's probably what is most terrifying. I don't know. I don't know how you would characterize my voice yesterday, but this was a group that's identity, that the veteran players, that the scheme was supposed to be about the line of scrimmage. And Mike, I think they're giving up nearly 6 yards a carry to Montana and to Michigan, and you're not doing anything about it. And on the flip side, I think you're rushing for less than 2 yards a carry. I mean, just something absurd. And you don't even need the stats to tell you that. You can look at the points scored and everything else, and it's just at a loss.
Well, I just want to spin it forward, because people can go listen to the sound on the podcast. But as I was thinking about it last night, the question I have, because I also heard you say, hey, this is what I'm hearing from the alums, right? Mm-hmm. And I know that the alums you hang out with aren't like, you know, somebody who just graduated yesterday. You're talking to Tie Club members and people with money and power and influence and real estate and all those types of things. And if that crew is unhappy, things change in a hurry, right?
Well, I don't think you're going to change Jimmy Lake, because once you start doing that and you see that all that change brings more change.
I'm not saying that. It's not what I mean.
See also USC,
right?
Who is on their fourth interim coach in 8 years.
I get it. I'm not saying they immediately dump Jimmy Lake, but I am saying that if the power brokers in the Husky alumni community with money are that upset, then Jimmy Lake's rope gets awfully, awfully short, doesn't it?
Well, I think Jimmy Lake's decision-making of who he is putting in charge of those situations, I think that would be the first domino, that things have to change. And he said as much this week, right? I mean, he knows it. You can't put out performances like that in a bottom-line business in a year that is enormous. I think that's also, and maybe that's why I was a little more emotional. You know the significance of this season. After a lost year last year for the Pac-12 at large, and unfortunately a lost year for you with no fans in that building, you gotta bring it back. Well, Chris Peterson is gone. He's not walking through that door anymore. In all of his track record of success and his history at Boise State and elevating you to a playoff team in 2016, that's not walking through the doors again. So it is incumbent upon you to bring, you know, this new era forward. Yeah. And to have a special, I mean, man. To have that Montana game is your first foray in front of 60,000 people in that gem of a stadium on a beautiful day. That you don't get many at bats, Mike. You're not Jared Kelenic. You can't go for an 0-for-40.
All right.
Okay. You're not Jared Kelenic. You can't be continue bases loaded, big situations. You don't keep getting at bat after bat after bat. You don't. It's not a 162 game season. There's six home games. This is what you get. This is your brand on display on these Saturdays. And here I go again.
Well, let me get you back on a Kelenic, because I know that you certainly have strong feelings there as well. You love to text me every time he fails in a big spot and really point it out. Were you watching yesterday or just following?
Both.
Well, I'm curious, because yes. Legitimately, Kelnick's at bat in the ninth, which obviously ends in frustration.
I know, it's
as he
inches away.
Out.
It's
Did you see
away.
It?
Yes, I
it
saw
was
the
that
highlight.
Close.
I was watching on Game
Does
Pass.
That change yes. it for you at all?
Yes, of course it does. And it is baseball. And baseball is a game of inches. And I know J.D. Martinez was about the same, couple
so
inches away from a double play ball as
all of
Kelenic
it
was.
Did you hear Kelenic talk about his at-bat in the ninth? Have you heard this yet? I just played it a few minutes ago. I'll play it for you also. I think you'll find it pretty interesting, A, because of how thoughtful he is about it and how open and honest he is, and also about how seriously Adam Ottavino took him in that spot.
We were looking at the scouting report, and when he was ahead in the count, he threw a lot of sliders, and so I was looking for something out over the plate. And really just, you know, my hands are quick enough to react to the fastball and just try to fight that pitch off. I was kind of looking for that hanger that he was going to try to freeze me on. I think he saw me fall off a fastball there and brought me to the next pitch. And then he threw his changeup like 3% of the time. And that 3% of the time, he used it against me there.
Wow. Yeah, kind of a next level into how much thought.
And you could hear some excuse-making potentially out of that, but I don't. What I hear is I'm focused on the scouting report. I understand what's coming at me, and I the process was right, even if the result wasn't.
Yeah, and he's a young player that is navigating so much. I don't bring him up to disparage him in this example. I bring that up because you do have a lot of volume. You are highly thought of. You're getting a ton of rope. You're getting massive opportunity, and he should. He's an immensely gifted player. But yeah, he's navigating that situation right now between, hey man, see ball, hit ball, versus, okay, here's I've got to do it. And I know that. I remember being a young player, Mike, like, okay, I got to make sure, you know, my feet are underneath me and my first step's at 6 o'clock and I'm going to read that safety and I'm going to, right? You just, all of those things as a young player that you do factor in. And then with experience, which is why you have said again and again, right? The elite baseball teams, you have to have experienced players, which I know will lead to great conversation this offseason about Seager and Haniger and some of the other components and pieces, because you can't field a bunch of talented young Jared Kelenics. Because unfortunately, you can't speed up experience. You can't all of a sudden, you know, like these computer programs, right? Oh gosh, I just simulated 20,000 games, and in those 20,000 games, the Seahawks went. No, it doesn't work that way. There's no simulation. Titus likes to do that on his MLB Live, right? He's playing, and he's got this. He's a minor leaguer, and he's working his way up, and you know, I just want to simulate these games. And, you know, no, doesn't work that way. You've got to take the lumps. That develops the calluses that eventually, in baseball especially, hopefully slows the game down. But that was pretty remarkable processing for even a young guy to spit that kind of info out.
We got to see. I mean, again, he is in that interesting spot where it's going to go in one of two directions.
How many people yesterday? Millions in Seattle? Seriously. How many people in that moment had the same thought that you and me and Kyle and Howdy, like, okay, come on right here. I know there's been other bases loaded.
It was the spot.
Other game, like, here you go, man.
And it was that
the
close.
Biggest game of the season, the biggest moment yet of the season, the ninth inning, second
stop.
On base.
Stop. I'm done with you. I'm done. I'm done. I can't keep doing it. I'm honestly doing the best I can not to be too upset about what happened yesterday, but it's hurt me on a very, very deep level today. And so, you know, I don't need to keep talking to you. I have Matt Hasselbeck now once a week. So you're like, you know, you're kind of old news to me. Like, I feel like I've traded up. I used to have Brock, and now I have, like, the guy who actually started while Brock was here. What do I need you for?
Because he won't do it every day. He'll give you one day a week.
But he's really good on that day.
Good.
He's more of a football team. Well, you're more of a baseball team at this point.
You know, there's an old country song that has a lyric.
Is there?
I'm not as good as I once was, but I'm good once as I've ever been. And that's, you know, Matt wants to do it once a week. Great. I'm here for you every day.
I appreciate
that. And tomorrow morning, you're going to hear from me in the hotel room.
Oh, in Pullman.
On the Palouse.
On the Palouse before you do USC Wazoo this weekend. All right, man. We will talk then.
Goodbye.
See you later. There's Brock Heward with me every morning at 7:45. Yeah, and always fine to, I'm happy to, you know, talk to him from the hotel room, just as long as he's not in the bathtub then. I know he's willing to take a bath in like a day's in, which I think is disgusting.
Like, of course you do.
He's a bath guy. No, I'm not saying it's disgusting to stay in a day's in. I would do that. That's fine.
Okay.
I'm not saying that. You stay in a day's in, use the shower. Like, that's what you have to do. He will take a bath in the days,
and he's a giant. I'm 6'1". I can't take a bath.
That's gross.
I'm with you on that one.
That's
I don't want to bathe in bathtubs that other people have.
That's gross. And again, you got to take a shower, but those are your feet touching it, or maybe your hands. He's got his whole body just rolling around in a cheap motel bathtub.
Knees are up.
Thanks, but no thanks. No chance. No way. All right. We talked earlier for a while, and just there even, about Jared Kelnick and just the intensity that he brings to the table and how he needs to figure out how to become Alex Bregman and not veer into being Josh Donaldson. But it did make us think, who are the most intense athletes we can remember? And that leads me to one of my favorite weird stories that's ever happened to me. It's coming up next in Ranked, Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Got a list? Time to put it in order.
Fred Dwumfor's house. Top five meals that I have ever had.
This is Ranked.
To be honest, that list was really biased.
Brought to you by Carter Volkswagen. Every morning at 9:45 on the Mike Salk Show.
That top 10 list, I'm not buying that.
Ranked.
Yeah, text message here says, how amazing would that Kelnick have been if he had made a total momentum change for this org? Yeah, it would have been a great moment. Hopefully it comes next year. But in talking about Jared and talking about his intensity, he does grip the bat tight. He is wound tight. He is very competitive. That's a nice way of saying it. He's a very intense guy. It led us today in Ranked to try to rank the five most intense athletes we could think of.
I know you have probably 100 of your own that you could go
through.
There's
a few, but let's go through them. Who do we got?
I'm starting with Randy Johnson.
Number five.
This most intimidating, and we were talking yesterday about Logan being halfway to the plate by the time he lets go of the ball. Randy.
Three quarters of the way to the plate?
Yeah. Throwing 99, 100.
Yeah, he is very intimidating from the height. The wildness, I think, early was very intimidating because he might be drilling you with 100.
The mullet.
But I think the intensity is obviously, like, that's the ultimate for him. You know, you probably don't remember him. I'm just a little older than you are, but Dave Stewart would be in that list. You remember Dave Stewart, the A's ace in the late 80s, early 90s when the A's were really good? Dude, that guy was super intense, really intimidating. Bob Gibson's before my time, but I think they all kind of follow the same path of, like, they're mad, they're angry, they're super intense out there. So, yeah, that's a good start.
Moving on, Ray Lewis.
He was pretty intense.
I mean,
yeah.
How, like, what else? The kid, I know there's a lot of football players because that's the sport.
Yeah, Earl Thomas, initial text. Earl's pretty intense in his own sort of weird off way. But I mean, I don't know. You certainly can't argue with Ray Lewis.
Yeah, Ray Lewis is high on my list. I mean, I'm going to try to go around to each sport. So, Maura, okay. Do you want to take the next one or do you want me to go with it?
Oh, I helped you put together the list, but you've actually got it, so you're going to have to remind me. I'm sorry.
Kevin Garnett.
First of all, he should be number one on this list.
Yeah, I guess when we came up with this segment, that was the first. Like, I thought he was number one. We just blurted him out. Yeah.
So, can I tell you my quick Garnett story? I've told this on the air before. It's bizarre. So, some of it I can't quite tell. But when I was trying to break into the industry, I worked as a reporter in Boston. And so I covered the Red Sox and Patriots. I did a lot of what they call stringing, which is where you go to a game. Maura, you were talking about doing this the other day. You go to a game and you work for other networks to try to help them either get sound or get a guest on the phone. And so I was covering that Lakers-Celtics series, the first one with Garnett and Kobe and all of that. And after the game, ESPN said, hey, we'll give you some money. It's not much, by the way. It's like $25. It's like, we'll give you $25 if you can give us some sound. Okay, fine. And $25 if you can get a guest. Like, all right. So I went down, and I didn't really know any. I didn't cover the Celtics nearly as much as the other teams. I didn't really know anybody. But Kendrick Perkins was the nicest guy. So I talked to Perk and was like, hey, will you go on with ESPN Radio? He's like, yeah, that's fine. So he takes my phone, and he's like, hey, come with me. This is after they had lost the game, I believe. And so he's like, yeah, and he walks into the showers. Now, media's not allowed in there. So I'm like, hey, man, I can't go in there. He's like, no, that's fine. You're with me. Okay. So I follow Kendrick Perkins into the outer area, like the anteroom of the shower where the sinks are. And I'm just standing there while he's on my phone. And I feel pretty weird. So I'm trying to, like, keep to myself. I'm off in the corner.
Jeez.
And Kevin Garnett walks out of the shower wearing nothing but a towel. He's got his towel, like, around his waist. He sees me, points at me, and goes, what the are you doing here? And I completely, like, I'm terrified. He is so intense. His eyes are bugging out
of
his head.
Did you urinate a little bit?
Thankfully, Perk, who, like, puts the phone down, goes, it's cool, man. He's with me. And Garnett goes, oh, I'm sorry. Hey, man, I'm Kevin. And I'm like, yeah, I know. I'm Mike. It's nice to meet you, Kevin. I'm sorry about the game. Literally, as this happens, this older guy who was dealing with the towels in the locker room comes through the shower area and slips. Feet go out from under him. His butt goes right on the ground. And he's old.
I was worried
he was concussed. Oh. Garnett looks at him for maybe a second. It's just like, I'm not even looking at this guy. Not even part of my life. He then goes, I swear to you, all of this is true. He then goes in front of the mirror, wearing nothing but his towel, and proceeds to stare into it, breathing like this for a good 20 seconds. And he's just staring into this mirror, and I'm now, I'm still there. I'm like a few feet away from him watching this. Then he turns to me and goes, and I'm trying to figure out how I could say this. I'll use the word guys, but that's not what he said.
Yeah.
He just turns to me and goes, we're going to get these guys in L.A. and walk out. And they did.
So he's already pumping himself up for the next game immediately following that towel.
It was super crazy. And again, he didn't say guys. I will not repeat the word he said. Certainly not a word I would feel comfortable repeating. But it was the most bizarre and intense thing. And then a few days later, they won, if you remember. And he yelled out anything is possible. You know the story behind that.
Best gif.
He was not supposed to yell that. Adidas was running a campaign that was called Impossible is Nothing. That was the tagline. And that's what he was supposed to yell. Impossible is nothing. But he didn't. He yelled anything is possible.
Oh,
and that's what
the
cameras caught.
Fantastic. All right, moving on.
That should be number one.
I'm sorry.
That was a great story.
That's a really good story. The story's
so
number one.
Totally true.
Back to football. Dick Butkus.
Oh, very intense. Can I play you my Dick Butkus sound?
Yes.
This is from my old favorite NFL Crunch Course video. I'm too young to have watched Butkus, but they interview him and he's like talking about this horror movie. It's great.
I don't go to the movies too often, but one particular movie that stands out in mind it was with Bette Davis. I think it was Hush, Hush, Sweet Charlotte. I got kind of a charge when that head come rolling down the stairs. I kind of like to sit there and watch it, see things happen, and maybe project those things happening on a football field, and not to me.
My goodness.
I like the head coming down the stairs. I'd like to project that happening on the football field. And not to me. Dick Butkus was awesome.
All right, running out of time, but this one I have to say is the unanimous number one. Most intense player, athlete of all time, Muhammad Ali.
Oh, I thought it was Secretariat. Super intense.
Yeah. really good.
Muhammad Ali's number one on every list. Doesn't matter what the list is. You can always just put Muhammad Ali number one.
A lot of good texts.
Right, we gotta go. We gotta run. We gotta get out of here. Thank you for the text. I'm sorry. Tomorrow, G. Scott will be with me. That'll be entertaining as we get ready for Tennessee on Sunday. Jake and Stacy coming up right now. We will catch you guys tomorrow. It's the Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.